And an engaged public, that's really fundamentally what drives our democracy. And everyone, you as an individual person, as a family member, and as a business leader, collectively bring all of that to the table when you cast your ballot and when you engage in the process.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable health care.
In this episode, Congresswoman Susan DelBene, who represents Washington's 1st District and serves as chair of the New Democrat Coalition, joined us to discuss the democracy and voting reforms in H.R. 1, the For the People Act. She answered questions from business leaders on how to pass H.R. 1 and what it would mean for voting accessibility. The Congresswoman also explained why a well-functioning democracy is important to the business community and how business leaders can get involved. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Hello, everyone. I'm Kenny Thompson, Head of External Affairs at PepsiCo and a member of the Business Forward Foundation Board. We are pleased to host Congresswoman DelBene for a conversation about H.R. 1, the For the People Act. Our series of briefings with elected officials give small business leaders like you an opportunity to share what's most important to you. And so we're so glad that you're here to join us today. We'd also like to thank the many local and state organizations for engaging and inviting their members, including Hispanic, Black, and AAPI chambers from across the country. I want to turn it over to Congresswoman DelBene for some brief remarks.
Thank you, Kenny. Thanks, everyone. I'm excited to be here with all of you, and I want to thank the Business Forward Network for inviting me today and for your longstanding partnership. We're going to discuss an issue that's very deeply important to me and core to our country and our democracy, H.R. 1. That's bill number one. And I say that because all House bills start with HR, and this is number one because it's so important, the For the People Act. We reserve the first 10 bill numbers at the start of every new Congress for our top priorities. And the For the People Act has been our number one bill since we're taking the majority to show how important this issue is to the future of our country. The last two elections, I think, clearly demonstrated the need for critical improvements to our election process with rampant voter suppression, dark money, and foreign interference. So H.R. 1 addresses these issues and more to renew confidence so that Americans know that our democratic process can be fair and just. First of all, the bill improves access to the ballot box by targeting blatant voter suppression tactics. Since the 2020 election, more than 200 voter suppression bills have been filed in state houses across the country in response to a false claim by Republicans that the election was stolen. And so we need to call these efforts out for what they are. They are fundamentally discriminatory. In 2018, 70% of the voters that were purged from the Georgia voter rolls were Black. This is despite the fact that only 1 in 3 Georgians are Black. So this disenfranchisement is wrong, it's anti-democratic, and it would end with the For the People Act. Second issue that I wanna highlight is dark money. So we're all too familiar with the role that dark money plays in our elections. I believe that the 2010 Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court was one of the most anti-democratic decisions in the modern era. We had issues with money in politics leading up to that case, but Citizens United opened the floodgates to dark money that we see today. And dark money, is money that funds efforts and campaigns where there's not disclosure, you don't know who is running these. The ads you might see or efforts you might see, so no transparency there. And it can be large sums of money that have an impact on elections. While Congress alone cannot fully undo this decision, the bill takes on the power of special interests. It forces disclosure and transparency. It reins in the influence of lobbyists and empowers small donations from everyday Americans, which is critically important so everyone can participate in our elections. As we approach the 2022 midterm election, states will be redrawing congressional districts. We're going through redistricting, and that process is starting across the country. I'm fortunate from the state of Washington, living in a state where we have a nonpartisan redistricting commission. That's the commission that is going to come up with the lines, the district lines for House districts. Remember, each House district across the country, those are distributed based on population. And so for every state, if you have more than one member of Congress, someone's got to decide who represents what areas. And so that's the point of redistricting and what will happen. In fact, when my district was drawn in 2012, and the last time we went through redistricting, it's every 10 years, it was redrawn when I was first elected to Congress. And my district was drawn to be what they call the most evenly divided in the country, or their most bipartisan district in the country, because they wanted it to be a competitive seat. Other states, though, definitely do not treat this as something where they're trying to be fair. We know that voters should pick their elected representatives and not have them picked for them. So when we have gerrymandering or redistricting that is done in a way to kind of favor a particular party, what we do in this bill and the For the People Act is we end partisan gerrymandering and make lawmakers more accountable to their constituents. We want there to be bipartisan efforts, independent efforts to draw districts. HR 1 passed the House earlier this month with the very strong support of the group that I am fortunate to chair, the Cycle the New Democrat Coalition. And now that legislation is moving to the Senate. I believe it would get a majority in the Senate, but there's one thing that's standing in the way, and you've heard about this a lot, that's the filibuster. The filibuster is a blockade that was self-created. It's killed many pieces of good legislation and stood in the way historically of other civil rights measures. And it's a great threat to the ability to make sure that we have important reforms like we have in HR 1 to make sure that everyone has access to the ballot and ability to participate and vote and strengthen our democracy. So Speaker Pelosi called this week for an exemption to the filibuster for civil rights legislation. Other reform ideas are also being considered, so some progress is being made. If that reform happened, then you would have a simple majority in the Senate to move legislation as opposed to needing a supermajority to pass a bill. I'm hopeful the Democratic majority in the Senate sees that how critically important it is that we get this bill over the finish line and do everything we can to make sure that we stop corruption and disenfranchisement in access to the ballot, as we've seen some states trying to move on already. So thank you for your interest in this fundamental issue, to each of us and our ability to have access to the ballot. And I'll turn it back to you, Kenny, for any questions that we might have.
Awesome, thank you, Congresswoman. I really appreciate your comments. We'll just dive in to questions if that's okay. The first question I have is from Cindy Bigley in Green Cove Springs, Florida. She asked about voter registration and how we can make it an automatic function of our government where, you know, maybe you go to get your license renewed and you get registered to vote. Is this something that you think can happen?
Well, it does happen. It just doesn't consistently happen across the country. Automatic voter registration really takes away a lot of barriers for eligible voters and helps increase our voter participation. Also, definitely helps increase young people getting engaged because we know we see lower numbers of young people voting. So by registering through a routine transaction, like when you go to get your driver's license at the DMV, voters won't have to worry about another registration deadline or application submissions or just not knowing what process they have to go through. So in a sense, it's really automatic enfranchisement in terms of being able to participate. So HR 1, the bill that we're talking about, would create automatic voter registration across the country, ensure that individuals who've completed felony sentences have their full voting rights restored, expand early voting, and enhance absentee voting. It would simplify voting by mail, something that was controversial, according to President Trump, but is actually been a really strong way to vote. My state, we're all vote by mail, and it has made access even better, participation better across our state. we would also reduce long lines and wait times for voters and modernize America's voting system. So many states, like my state of Washington, participate in automatic voter registration. And so we've already seen that success, and we'd like to see that success across the country.
No, absolutely. We saw that just months ago in January in states like Georgia and obviously yours, Colorado as well. Next question is from Sally in South Carolina. And let's assume that this much needed legislation passes. Now, what happens to all the legislation that's happening currently at the state level to disenfranchise voters of color and of disabilities? What happens to that legislation that's currently trying to be enforced?
So we've seen since the 2020 election, I said earlier, more than 200 voter suppression bills have been filed in state houses across the country. And some have gotten to the just to an incredible extent where it'd be against the law to give someone water while they're standing in line waiting to vote. Just to tell you the extremes that folks have gone to, this is all about making it harder and harder for people to exercise their right to vote. And these bills are blatantly discriminatory. As I said before, we've seen voter purges or taking away polling areas in places where we have larger communities of color, low-income communities. So this has been very targeted and very detrimental to making sure that we have equal representation. So HR 1 would expand access to the ballot box by taking aim at these institutional barriers to voting. And so that they wouldn't be able to put these in place, including cumbersome voting registration systems, the disenfranchisement that we're talking about with these bills, and limited voting hours, because we've seen others also just try to make it harder. If you make really long lines and then you close the polls so that people never got a chance to get there, that's another way you can impact. So that's why federal legislation is important, so that we know that these, if we pass this bill, we would have a common standard across the country and make sure that we protected people's right to vote across the country.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. This next question sort of gets into, you know, the ifs and ands and maybe the consequences. Nancy from Rhode Island asked for you to discuss the federal government role versus the states in setting voting rights that impact, you know, voting legislation and voting rights. Her concern is, and I quote, "For expanding voting rights and easing voting restrictions options for U.S. citizens, but we need to secure the process such that we do not have voter fraud." Now, I know that we know that the voter fraud claim has been debunked across the country, but there are people who have real concerns that this is an actual issue. So how do you balance the state's rights versus the federal guidelines to make sure that everyone has access to the ballot?
So elections should be run at the state and local level. That's actually been a strength also for us from a security standpoint and other areas. And that's been true since the founding of the Republic. What we're talking about here is preventing states from putting in place blatantly discriminatory policies that are really about disenfranchising voters. So the key of HR 1 is to prevent folks from doing that. I do think, again, one thing I want to talk about when we talk about making sure that we have strong election systems, I talked about vote by mail. If you look at vote by mail that we use in our state, you have a paper ballot, you have a paper trail as a result. So things are counted, but you have something to go back to. It is a very strong system, both in terms of access and in terms of making sure that we have a strong security in place. And so that's why HR 1 is so important, not only with access to voting, but also in terms of addressing things that have been used in campaigns like dark money. We needed the Voting Rights Act to protect Black voters in the South in the past. And another bill that we'll be looking at moving, which is HR 4, another incredibly important bill, is the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, to put the teeth back in the Voting Rights Act so that we continue to make sure that we have done everything possible to make sure everyone has access to the ballot. So that and HR 1 really are about protecting voters by setting universal standards and really access to the ballot. again, HR 1, it would ensure that American elections are decided by American voters without interference by enhancing federal support for voting system security. We also tried to do some of this last year in the House. It took it all the way through in terms of making sure that states have resources to help make sure that they can implement strong voting systems. And we want to increase oversight of election system vendors to make sure that there are strong options that are available and security is a top priority. And we'd like to see the development of a national strategy to protect U.S. democratic institutions. So there's the policy in terms of making sure we end the discriminatory practices and getting resources to states. And then I think we then have the opportunity to help in states and local elections to make sure that they have the systems that they need to help engage with their voters and increase turnout and get people to the ballot. So we have strong representation in our elections.
Absolutely. And you've got a collection of business leaders from across the country, big business leaders, small business owners. How can they, and why should they, you know, get involved in this? Why should they engage on, you know, these types of issues that are happening across the country? So I just think that's, we've seen such a momentum from the private sector to engage more and more on these types of issues. And I'm curious, like, what your opinion is on why that's important.
Well, first of all, as an elected official myself, I'd say we want everyone in our community should have a strong voice. And your ballot, your vote is your voice. That has a huge difference on who your local elected officials are, on who your members of Congress are out in D.C. And we are setting policies that help make sure that we have a strong economy, help make sure that we're supporting workers and small businesses. You've seen that even in our most recent conversations around providing relief to communities for the pandemic.
Right.
So absolutely. If we're really going to have a strong economy and make sure that your voices are heard, it's going to be because people had access to the ballot and were able to engage with candidates and make their voice heard with their vote. So I'd say HR 1 is good overall for our communities and for our economy and our business community too, because it reinforces making sure that we have strong democratic institutions, making sure that people have access to the ballot and that your voice is heard.
Well, absolutely. I think it's really been interesting, obviously, over the course of the pandemic. And then we saw the racial and social justice reckoning last year, and obviously the election in November and in January. We've seen the private sector just increasingly engage on these issues. And I think for an organization like Business Forward, it's super exciting because, you know, we're here in DC, but we know we have business leaders all across the country. We're looking for this type of engagement from the private sector. So your leadership on this and engaging with us on these types of issues is great because, you know, we know we have a role to play. And frankly, you know, having these types of issues top of mind, really, I think, helps move the needle at the federal, state, and local level.
Absolutely. I think this is we're talking about really fundamental issues to our democracy, to the way our democracy works. And the most fundamental part is voting and people's participation. Our democracy is also dependent on people actively participating. And we know with ongoing disenfranchisement, if people don't feel like they have a voice, they don't feel like folks and decisions are being made representing their needs, that impacts all of us. And so I do think whether it's an economic issue, an issue for someone's family, an issue for your neighbors or others, that's why it's so important that we collectively participate and engaged. And I do think also it's important that our governance works, that people come right together and make decisions. That's what we're elected to do. And the other thing that everyone here has the ability to do as a voter is to engage not only in the ballot, but also engage with legislators, ask them where they stand on issues, or just tell them your story and how decisions impact you. All of those collectively help make us a stronger country.
Thank you so much for that that follow-up and that insight. I think, you know, you're absolutely right. And, you know, we've got some comments from our network from across the country. I'm going to read a couple of them and then ask you to respond at the end, if that's cool with you. Jim Cannon from Deerfield, New Hampshire says, democracy will keep and attract the best and most talented people. Kathy Norman from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, great town, by the way, says, businesses can't plan ahead when there's no transparency or accountability. And then lastly, John of Grand Rapids, Michigan says, a thriving economy depends on an orderly functioning democracy. In response, why do you think democracy reforms and voting rights are important to the business community? I know that we've gotten to it a little bit, but these are, I think a lot about it from these towns that these folks are from and thinking about the local elections. And I know we talk a lot about members of Congress and obviously the president, but can you talk a little bit about how this affects them locally, the city council members and the mayors and things like that?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, someone was talking about transparency. I'd also hear a lot from the business community about certainty. And that means the certainty that policymakers will make decisions about issues and that there you'll have as a business leader the ability to make a long-term decision. It could be simple as a tax policy that you're counting on and you're projecting in your financials. And if that changes every year or it never gets decided and you're not sure, that uncertainty makes it really difficult for you to plan. And so if we don't have people engaged in our democratic process, then one, they might not have elected leaders who understand those issues. And I'm talking at all levels of government, not just in Congress, at all levels of government, understand the issues that you're facing as a business leader. But if we have the gridlock that we have seen for so long, where folks don't actually come to the table and try to find a way to find policy solutions, and that's something that as a head of the New Democrat Coalition, we feel it's very important that we get things across the finish line, not just talk about them, because we don't get them across the finish line, it doesn't help you. We can talk about concepts, but really to see change, we've got to help. And so that combination of being able to hold elected officials accountable, making sure that you know where they stand on issues and you can get accurate information. That's an issue on, for example, on dark money, where there's lots of disinformation that maybe we put out there that makes it harder. So for all those reasons, making sure that we have strong legislation like HR1 and that you then feel like you have the ability, and it will be different in different parts of the country already is in terms of people's feeling of disenfranchisement. If everyone feels like they can engage and involve, that active participation is what changes our ability to move policy, to make sure views are represented. And an engaged public, that's really fundamentally what drives our democracy. And everyone, you as an individual person, as a family member, and as a business leader, collectively bring all of that to the table when you cast your ballot and when you engage in the process.
Congresswoman, do you have any thoughts on the Senate companion bill of HR1?
So I think, and I brought this up earlier, the challenge is that we pass the legislation in the House and the bill passes in the House with a simple majority.
Yeah.
But the rules in the Senate that were not kind of original rules in the Senate that were put in place later say that you need a supermajority to do that. That is not a fundamental rule. It's not a constitutional issue. It's kind of been a practice in the Senate for a while, and exceptions have been made to say that for certain things, like Republicans said for Supreme Court justices, sure, it shouldn't need a supermajority. Now they would prefer that it was a simple majority. When we're talking about something so fundamental as right to the, you know, access to the ballot, and to make sure fundamentally we have a strong system for voting rights and to make sure that we have strong elections, then that's it. I think it's critically important that we realize how important that is. Civil rights broadly have been an area where folks want to make sure that legislation moves, is not blocked because one person, a few people decide to prevent a bill from moving forward. So that's why there's been discussion about saying for something critical like voting rights, and civil rights that exceptions are made to that rule, that kind of not hard rule, right? But kind of more recent kind of tradition that this would move forward. And if we can move it with a simple majority, then I think we have a great chance to get that through the Senate. And that's the debate that's taking place right now.
Congresswoman, do you see any like bipartisanship, any role in, you know, bringing, you know, both parties along on this? I fundamentally think that more people should vote. So I guess for me, it's just pretty straightforward. But do you
absolutely?
But I mean, obviously, you know, we're having this conversation because there's currently actions that are opposed to that. So I'm just curious, like, what are you hearing, like, on the, you know, far bipartisanship and like working together, or is this, you know, is this the Democrats going it alone?
Well, number one, it should absolutely be bipartisan. It is heartbreaking to think that when we talk about fundamental issues of making sure that we have districts that are drawn, you know, without a political influence, to make sure that we don't have dark money overwhelming our campaigns, and make sure that we have transparency so people know if there's an ad out there, who's behind it, and maybe at least understand why they might be expressing the view that they have. You know, these are issues that should be bipartisan. We should all want to do everything possible to make sure that everyone in every American has the ability to cast their ballot. It is so incredibly disheartening to think that that wouldn't be bipartisan. And just as it's disheartening to see these state laws that are blatantly trying to disenfranchise voters. So there's clearly, you know, folks have their own political objectives in trying to make it harder for folks to vote. But that's why I think we have to stand up, and we should be standing up in a bipartisan way. And I would say that in the public, maybe not so much with what you see from elected officials in Congress, for example, but in the broad public, I do think there's bipartisan support for that. And the way that we make that happen is if the public engages and votes, because that will impact their elected officials at the state level who are making those decisions, and also at the federal level.
That leads me to my next question. Actually, it's a question from Dan in North Carolina, who's asking what he can do to support voting rights efforts for all Americans.
Well, one, we can each be a role model ourselves and participate. We can help make sure that folks understand why this piece of legislation is so important, and help make sure others understand why it's so important that we share that information out there. We can write letters to the editor, or, you know, op-eds. We can talk about this at community forums and other places in our community, share information like we are now. We have a helpful resource at hr1.house.gov that you can use that has more information specifically about the bill and details there if you have questions. So I do think that we all have the ability to lead in our community and help others engage and be involved, because as we collectively do that, that's how we see change.
Absolutely. And I meant to ask you this earlier. Do you have any sense of timing, you know, voting schedules, and when we can actually see, you know, some movement on this?
Well, we passed it in the House, so that was a top priority, and we'd love to see it move in the Senate as quickly as possible. We talked about some of the issues they're working through to understand on the filibuster rules, on a majority versus a simple majority versus a supermajority in the Senate. But we need to move quickly, because as we've seen already, these states who are trying to make it harder for people to access the ballot, to disenfranchise voters, they're moving right away. And so it's important that we get legislation in place, not only for federal elections, but we, you know, every year we'll have local elections coming up. It's important that we have rules in place to make sure that we are focused on voter engagement, not on voter disenfranchisement.
Absolutely. And on HR4, where is that in the process on the John Lewis bill?
So we'll be taking that up in the House. That hasn't passed in the House yet. Our first focus was getting through HR1, because that has so many fundamental that are critical. But I was born in Selma, Alabama. And John Lewis was always a hero of mine, and he fought so hard for voting rights and how important, critically important it is for all of us. And it's so sad that we lost such an incredible leader for our country, but we're all here gonna continue to fight for voting rights. And that's why we named this bill after him, HR4, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, to continue his work.
Yeah, I didn't know you were from Selma. I had the opportunity to do one of his trips that the late congressman did every year. And I mean, you talk
walk
about
across the bridge.
Yes, absolutely. You talk about just seeing someone on TV for such a long time and then being with him, crossing over to that bridge. I went when I was working for then Vice President Biden. And I mean, just an incredible feeling. Right, an incredible man to stand next to and to get to know. So, I hope for a lot of reasons that we get HR4 across the finish line. But he was just a great man, and he's dearly missed.
And what he did, and so many others with him, to stand up for this basic right to vote, how critically important it was, and what people did to fight for that. And that's why I feel so strongly, and I know many of you do too, that we continue that fight, that it really is about making sure that everyone has their voice heard, and that we are a representative democracy of the great diversity in our country. And so we should not be complacent. We realize there are attacks on people's ability to access the ballot, and it's up to all of us collectively to work hard to make sure that we continue the incredible work that happened back in the 60s and keep that moving forward.
Absolutely. I think we're running up on time, but I wanted to make sure that, is there anything that I missed? Any questions that I should have asked that I didn't, or anything else you'd like to discuss?
No, if people have questions, again, hr1.house.gov is a great resource. And we put out a lot of information there. There will be ongoing work to get information out to communities and engage. All of us can engage. All of us can be strong voices in our communities. So there's legislation like this that's important, but there's also the work we do every day to remind people how valuable their right to vote is, and that we all take that precious opportunity we've been given and participate. And another thing we can all encourage our friends and neighbors to do.
Absolutely. And I think that gets to my very last question, which is, like as I mentioned earlier, you're talking to business leaders from all across the country. And, what can they do in their towns and their cities to help promote the For the People Act?
Engage, let people know. As I said, write op-eds or let people know in other ways how important this is. And engage with your community as campaigns start, as folks are looking to for local elections on mayors and others coming up. Help people engage in the process and realize how important it is to talk to folks, to understand where they stand on issues, to engage, to be informed voters. Not only do we want to make sure everyone has access to the ballot and is not disenfranchised, we also want people to be engaged and involved. And that's another thing that all of us can do, is bring others along, especially young people who haven't had that opportunity yet, might be first-time voters, or haven't regularly voted. We can all spend our time making sure that they're engaged and involved too, and set a good standard going forward.
Congressman, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations to your new chairmanship. Looking forward to your leadership, particularly on this issue. I mean, it really struck me when you said you're from Selma. I mean, that just sort of brought it all home for me. So I can't thank you enough for taking the time today. Everyone knows how busy you are. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Kenny. And thanks for the time today. And everyone, please be engaged and involved, and also stay safe and stay healthy during this challenging time.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle. produced and engineered by Alexi Littman and Alex Pastanen. Special thanks to our Director of Programming, Jana Platt. Thanks for listening. See you next time.